Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of this show, recognize if they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is Part Sinner, Part Saint on Late Night Poets of Blog Talk Radio. We are a group on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can read the poems along with us and talk to us in the chat. And I am your host, Aphasiana, with my co-host here. Babbler.
Babbler.
Hello.
Hi, I'm echoing like crazy.
You know, I think it might be my phone. It's been having problems. My phone broke. I had to get a new phone, and my new phone makes people echo, and I don't know how to make it stop.
Are you on speakerphone?
It's been fun.
Are you on speakerphone?
Yes, but if I take it off, it'll still do it.
Hmm.
Huh.
Do you hear me twice?
I'll be right back. You're fine on my end. but it'll make it difficult for you. So let me go see if I'll put, I'll mute myself, and I'll go see if I can find my headset, and I'll see if that helps.
Okay. Let's see. That worked. I don't hear myself anymore. Okay. So tonight we have some poetry, of course. We have two contests that we'll be reading from. The first one we started last week, and that is the shoulder dilemmas. Actually, we've had a little bit of it 2 weeks in a row, but now we're going to read more of those poems. So the shoulder dilemmas contest is one where it's sort of like the demon and angel on your shoulders, except it's not demons and angels. It's not based on any religious icon kind of thing. It is instead crows, fairies, goblins, raccoons, dragons, Bigfoot, and squirrels, and they all have their own kind of twist of what they do. For example, the raccoon tells you to indulge in delicious foods, promotes a cleanly lifestyle, and promotes petty theft, whereas a squirrel tells you to run from your problems, but also to plan for the future. So they're really fun, and I'm excited to see what people chose as their shoulder creatures. All right, so let me just look at what we have first. There is one by Ghetto Child, and I'm going to put that up on the board, so if you're following along with us, you can read. And here we go. Resistant Voices by Ghetto Child. The tiniest whispers yell bloody murder in my ear. To try and stay clear is weird, but I must. Handcuffed, the noises grow, echoes of Tinker's voice. A fairy tale not meant to tell, for the past is fueled by devilish thoughts. Trapped in front of gases that bring to naught a story not everlasting. But there is a choice worth unmasking. A glitter box that's locked, and I wonder what's inside. Something shiny to blind eyes, a pecking order is afoot. With a grim outlook, I need the strength of my people to rise above dismantling the destructive path of evil. With a thousand voices, may this curse be lifted. Let this homage a declaration that the temptation was resisted. End poem.
Please come back.
Yes, you are.
Okay.
I hear you.
Great read. I got that about halfway through. So if you want to go ahead, and I know you just read it, but comment on it, and then it'll give me a chance to read it. But I've got my headset now. Hope that helps.
It does. I don't hear myself anymore. It's great. Thank you. I thought this was really great because the bloody murder being whispered by the tiniest, like, you think it's going to be a sweet voice, but it's not. And this fits with the chart that had said, a fairy mostly tells you to do murder, which is part of the prompt. So I liked the line, handcuffed, the noises grow, echoes of Tinker's voice. So it's like, even if, you know, you hold her back, it's still loud in your head. The more you hold it back, the louder these urges become, and the echo of Tinker's voice, that those devilish thoughts are still there. I really liked a story not everlasting, because so many times in fairy tales and things, it's like, you know, tuck everlasting, something, there's someone everlasting, but to have it not everlasting is not something that I don't think I've seen that in those particular wordings, and I enjoyed it. Where is it now? dismantling the destructive path. I like the way that that sounded as well. And a declaration to temptation resisted in the end there is a really good ending. I think this works well as a metaphor, both about like regular temptation, but also maybe with mental illness as well, when you not necessarily hear voices, although that could be the case, but, you know, have those sudden kind of impulses to do something that is not your norm, and not socially acceptable either, and there's the resistance of that and the attempt at self-control, and I think the fairy works well here to bring that to life. Thank you, Ghetto Child. Babbler, did you have a chance to read it?
Yeah. Thank you. Sorry about technical difficulties. I really enjoyed this piece on the twisting of the little evil fairy, but it's not immediately evil. You know, even though it starts with the tiniest whispers yell bloody murder in my ear, like, and that's how it opens, and yet for some reason I'm still, like, inclined to think for whatever reason that the fairies are good, even though it becomes more and more apparent that no, the little fairies are not good. And I like, too, the use of, like, Tinkerbell, even, because even in Peter Pan, you know, the use of Echo's Tinker's voice, she's not the nicest. You know, Tinkerbell mischievous, jealous, and she sabotages. Like, she's not, you know, this sweet little innocent fairy. She's kind of mean. And I also like that this is kind of a play on, like, well, resisting temptation, but also just, it makes me think of, like, intrusive thoughts and things like that, like impulsive behavior, you know, because it's impish, but it's not necessarily, like, super evil. So, like, it's dark, and yet it's also a little bit playful. And I think that's, you know, reinforced by the rhyming as well, especially in those last two lines. You know, and I also like, you know, that the temptation was, I thought this was a clever take on the prompt. I think it was well done.
Me too. And Ghetto Child is actually an amazing rapper too. So I'm really curious how he would have presented it. Like, I just read it, and it may be a poem. I think it is a poem. But I know that when he does his audios, they're incredible. So we got to talk him into submitting some audios soon. Although, you know, not going to peer pressure him right away because he's gone from AP for a while and he's back and I'm happy to have him back. So I won't totally pressure you, but please, please give us audios. our next poem is by Peter Solway. I don't think we did this one last week. Correct me if I'm wrong, though, Babbler. If it's not one we read, then can you please read that for us?
I don't believe we read this one. We did read a different one by Peter Solway. I believe it was a carryover last week. So I will go ahead and read this one. This is O Unlisted List. I looked and looked, had a leak, thought of all things pleasant by that Willow Creek, pink couple on the other bank. Warm sands of civilization, palms to stand and fan. Oh, modest daisies to water, drink some yellow ammonia. Then the first creature, wrinkled as corn, spitting towards Darwinian ape, universe to contest rights of indigenous. Uncle Albert, with his stick, tired moon landing, coming back to Earth, retirement in Florida, arcades of shopping. End poem. I thought this was pretty interesting. I mean, to start with, you know, just taking a pee, you know, standing somewhere and taking a pee and looking out and seeing a pink couple on the other bank. And when I read Pink Couple, I instantly envisioned them being naked, you know, just like some nude people, like on the other side of the river, like European in front of, which I thought was interesting. And then to take that and expand upon it to be like warm sands of civilization, palms to stand and fan, just kind of zooms it out. In my opinion, like it takes it from like a really personal moment to make it like a more large scale moment. But then we go right back to the peeing. Oh, modest daisies to water, drink some yellow ammonia. Then the first creature wrinkled his corn, almost as the world and civilization and everyone was created from piss. Which is just kind of, it feels like mythological and kind of dark, but yet not that far really from most mythologies, you know. Interesting. You know, and then the evolution of people, you know, spinning towards Darwinian ape universe to contest rights of indigenous Uncle Albert the Stick of Chalk, I feel like is almost like fast forwarding in time to go from like a creature born from piss, all the way to moon landing, and yet then to almost regress back again to retirement in Florida, arcades of shopping, feel so like cheap. I'm not quite sure what the overall arching theme is on this one, but the imagery, like item by item, is kind of fascinating, you know. To start with someone just like taking everything in as they take a pee, and then to go through all of these different steps and different themes, which is fascinating. So I thought it was a really interesting piece from Peter. I think, you know, like so many of his pieces, it requires a bit more mulling. What are your thoughts, Susanna?
Well, I agree with everything that you've said. I did find it interesting that it starts with having a pee. And then even when it says warm sands of civilization, I was thinking about, like, the pee warming the sand where he's outside peeing. But then, you know, obviously that's just not exactly what is being said. But I feel like he's really good at making things multi-layered. So this taking a piss kind of thing is, like you said, it's mythological. Of it kind of creates life in this. I really liked "Oh, modest daisies to water, drink some yellow ammonia." continuing the peeing motif, but I like the modest daisies. Daisies are one of those things where people take it for granted. They're beautiful, but they're not like the thing that like you get on like Valentine's Day, or like usually roses get all of the attention. So daisies here, the modest kind of like girl next door kind of thing. It's like those flowers that are pretty and grow everywhere, but then to water them with your pee and then refer to that as like how the first creatures came. And I liked wrinkled as corn. I don't often think of corn being like wrinkled, but I guess if you picture the kernel, it kind of does. But I wrinkled as corn is interesting. Very interesting images in this. Fascinating. I'm not sure, based on this, which creatures he chose for his shoulders. What would you think, Babbler? Did he have a creature in mind?
You know, I'm looking at it, and I'm trying to, you know, I'm not sure, because it's not like any of the creatures from the poem option we talked about peeing. like, and then I'm thinking, like, is the urine like gold, like
dragons, but that seems kind of gross. Not that it rolls it out, but just it seems kind of nasty. I'm not totally sure.
He may not have chosen one. I just was curious if you had a guess at that.
I don't know, but my guess would be dragon, because urine is goldish, and the dragon is telling you to, like, destroy your enemies or anything that bothers you, not even enemies, just things you think are annoying, and take anything that pleases you. And there's something kind of hedonistic about this rite, you know? Just pissing wherever you want, you know, not really giving a shit. And then, you know, like, kind of overlooking all of this stuff and just being like, oh, the moon landing's boring, whatever. I just retire in Florida and go shopping. You know, like, there's this weird undertone of kind of, like, hedonism, which feels kind of like the dragon kind of thing.
I can see that.
It's not that, then maybe Bigfoot, but, like, not really keeping your personal affairs private if you're whipping it out publicly and peeing.
I was kind of chuckling to myself about that, because to spend more time in nature, yes, it seemed like that, but not keeping things very private.
That's a different kind of private.
It is.
Not the it same definition.
Yeah. Nice. Our next poem is by Dammit Dave. It's called Dragon in Me. A dragon lives within me, and he whispers in my ear his schemes of all deaths he's planned for foes of mine to fear. And though I listen to each ploy, they're just a fairy tale. Sure, they would bring me lots of joy, but I would go to jail. There are some folks I'd like to kill, but it's all for naught. I must forgo the deadly thrill for fear of getting caught. End poem.
Great read. I enjoy how, like, both dark and light-hearted this poem manages to be at the same time. It makes it so relatable, because I think a lot of people, or at least people I know, or at the very least myself, you know, certainly get frustrated with other people and are just like, oh, I just want to, like, choke them. You know, I would obviously never actually do that. I can't say the thought has to occur to me. You know, or sometimes my husband gets up a little bit road ragey and talks about how he would, like, you know, wish he had a rocket launcher on his car. You know, all very illegal things that are more about venting frustration than they are about actually wanting to commit murder. But I love that it's just, they're just a fairy tale. Sure, they bring me lots of joy, but I would go to jail. Like, so the temporary joy bringing from, like, from harming others and people who annoy you, you know, anything bothersome is, like, not worth the consequences. We won't be killing anybody, because I don't feel like going to jail or getting caught. Although it's a little bit scary that's all that's, like, preventing you from being a mass murderer, you know, is a potential prison sentence. but that aside, I do feel like this is very tongue-in-cheek. It feels, like, mischievous. Like, it feels almost, like, more naughty than anything else, you know. Or, like, a joke. Like, I'd kill everyone, you know, if I could get away with, like, if I didn't have to go to jail. But I don't want to go to jail, so I guess we all are safe. I liked it. I thought it was clever. I thought it was fun. It has a rhyme scheme that kind of adds to the humor of it as well. So, I thought it was a great write from Dan and Dave. Your thoughts, Susanna?
I agree. I felt like the rhymes and the word choices, like schemes, and the pace of it, the way that the natural kind of cadence of it, so I guess the meter, gave it sort of a whimsical feel. And I think that lightened the mood of, like, you know, wanting to kill people. I must forgo the deadly thrill. Just, like, the word choices and the way that the syllables go, it just, it seems very playful to me. And I think that that was perfect for this contest because, yes, it was talking about our darker side, but it was definitely, you know, the whimsy of having influences by, you know, raccoons and goblins and things. So I think that this tale of having the dragon in me worked very nicely. Thank you, damn it, Dave.
The levity of murder.
Yes, you know, a rare thing that I would consider it to be, you know, a light topic, and yet here we are. The next one is by Luke Jr., if you would read that for us, Babbler.
Yeah, so this is Phonesis Phrenesis by Luke Jr., A301. I'm sorry for the pain you're going through. A301. I'm sorry for the pain that you're going through. I'm sorry. 3:30 a.m. Shadows keep me accompanied. I'm starting to feel less alone. Every so often there's a flash of light. I think it's the storm outside. The window is showing more emotion than I am. Rainy tears. I'm starting to feel sorry for you. Are the shadows with you, too? A302. I'm sorry for making a mistake. It's my fault. A302. I'm sorry for making a mistake. It's their fault. A301. I'm sorry for making a mistake. It's her fault. I'm sorry. 3:31 a.m. Within a minute, fewer shadows surround me. Every so often, there's a flash of light. I'm afraid to sleep tonight. The midnight sky was long overdue. I'm afraid to sleep for you. I'm starting to feel sorry for myself. Are the shadows in sickness and health? A303, I'm sorry for pushing you away. I'm scared, okay? A303, I'm sorry for pushing you away. I'm hurt, okay? B301. I'm sorry. 3:35 a.m. Within a few minutes, shadows are starting to rectify. Thoughtless figure veins. Blurry silhouettes turning into objects. You made me feel like an object. I'm sorry to self-inject. I'm starting to feel sorry for all of you. The shadows are normal. And alone? B301. I'm sorry for the pain you're going through. I love you. B301. I'm sorry for the pain you're going through. I miss you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. 8 a.m. End poem. Well, this is a really interesting piece. You know, it felt almost like a dark, like, cerebral scene from a movie, almost, which I thought was an interesting way to do it. You know, and then to also think about the title, you know, the phonesis, sorry, and phronesis, like, the way that, you know, what that would mean to it and what that would tie to it, because I feel like that leads in a lot of ways to what the voices that they're kind of mimicking, you know, where one is about you know, phonesis being like articulation and saying things, and phrenesis being more about thinking things and philosophizing about things. And so it's kind of like this internal discussion, you know, and actual saying versus thinking is kind of how I'm interpreting it. I'm picturing, like, somebody who is completely unable to sleep because being racked by guilt or these thoughts. And I also found it really interesting how things kind of devolve, you know, to be, I'm sorry about the pain you're going through is kind of other. You know, there's still some blame there, like the I'm sorry on yourself. And to be kind of haunted by these shadows who are more able to express emotion, particularly like that line, the window is showing more emotion than I am, rainy tears. You know, and I'm starting to feel sorry for you, like gaining this sense of empathy. Are the shadows looking too, almost like asking, you know, do you also feel bad? Like, are you also up at night thinking about this? And then the next part I found interesting because it devolves the other way from going like, it's my fault to no, it's somebody else's fault. Which seems almost like a de-evolution of ownership of whatever's going on. I don't quite understand the numbers. They almost look like apartment numbers, you know, the A301 and the A302. I find that fascinating. You know, and then all of those first sections of the poem happening within a minute, you know, to then feel less guilty. You know, fewer shadows surround me. Every so often there's a flash of light. You know, like there's this lightning storm happening in the mind, but a little less guilt. And they're feeling sorry for themselves. Also the line, are the shadows in sickness and in health, make me think of a married couple, you know, and wedding vows in particular. You know, do you take them in sickness and in health? Like there's something maritally, you know, wrong between the person they're addressing, you know, and then to continue to like apologize. I'm sorry for pushing you away. I'm scared and I'm hurt, which seems like the phronesis is, you know, the things that aren't said but maybe should be said. And then we're introduced to the B301, which I thought was interesting because it's a letter change, not just a number change. And then continuing more through this kind of internal thought. You made me feel like object. I'm sorry to self-inject. For some reason, that made me almost think of like drug use, to self-inject. It seemed more violent and direct than some of the other lines, so that was interesting. And then we're back to the guilt that seems to last until 8 o'clock in the morning. This sounds like a really bad night, and kind of trying to mentally figure yourself out. And yet it seems cyclical and not like there's any real progress made. It seems to wander back and forth. So it's kind of interesting. It's almost like a dark night in the mind of someone who's really struggling with something, but you don't really get any of the details. But you do get the emotion, and that way it's very effective. You know, like, it does feel dark. It feels gloomy. You can almost feel and see the storm and the sleeplessness. It's very interesting. Very interesting. I don't see a lot that I'm intrigued by it. Your thoughts, Viviana?
I really enjoyed the, you know, the timing. And like you said, it's 1 minute and so much happens within that 1 minute. And then there's like 4 minutes later, they're at a new state of mind. So when I looked up phronesis, definition that I got was a state of frenzy and delirium. And I think when you're overtired, it's easy to get into a bit of a delirium, and you know, when you're overthinking in the way that some of us do in the middle of the night, then your mind kind of does become a state of frenzy, where it just jumps around to conclusions. I liked that it went like it's my fault, and then right after that, it's their fault. And I kind of wonder if that was like trying to convince yourself it's not my fault, because then you can go to sleep. Then you don't have to feel guilty about it. It's their fault. And then you're thinking about it, and it's like, well, it's that one specific person. It's her fault. And then it kind of goes back to your feeling guilty about things. I like that there's repetition of the I'm sorry, because that's like the trap that this person is in that mental loop where it's going around and around. And then it shows that it goes all the way from 3:30 a.m., to 8 a.m. So they stay up all night worrying about things and having this mental conversation. And there's something special about 3:30 a.m. And I can't remember it. I know I looked it up a long time ago because I have a tendency to wake up at exactly 3:30. Not as much as I used to, but like when I was younger, I would always wake up at exactly 3:30. And I was convinced that there was like something about that. So I kept looking it up, and it was like, I don't know, it's some kind of sleep cycle thing, but also it's like if you're worried, then that's like when you're jumps into something. I got to look into it. But I think it's intentional that it starts at 3:30. And at first when I was reading the A302 things, I thought it was time, but it's not. It's different than when it's talking about the time. So I'm not totally sure. Like, it kind of sounds like it would be coordinates. It reminds me of like playing bingo or battleship, you know, under the A 302. But it doesn't, location doesn't quite work unless it's like location within your mind as it circles around, because it goes back, it's 301, and then later on it's back to 301. The beginning and the end are 301. So in a way, I think it's about being in that loop, going in the circle. I liked the line, "You made me feel like an object. I'm sorry to self-inject." And the self-inject, it could be like drugs. It could also be like inject yourself into a situation, into something that was none of your business. To stick yourself in there. And you felt objectified, so you did something, or maybe you were objectified because you put yourself in a certain situation. And then that kind of like feeling sorry for themselves and feeling sorry for the other person and being lost in this loop of just being sorry in general. This was full of emotion. And like you say, we don't know the circumstances, but you can just picture this person being like tortured mentally as they, through the night, try to deal with whatever has happened.
I'm fascinated by the 3:30 thing they were talking about. I forgot there was certain, it was like later than that. Not that that's shocking, because I go to bed much later. I'm a crazy night owl. But I used to wake up at like 4:31 every morning. And I just started to get frustrated with it. Like, why do I keep waking up at 4:31? Like, but it just makes me think, no, it's interesting. It's very emotionally interesting, this piece. You know, like, even if you don't totally know the circumstances of the right, I think the inner turmoil, I think, is relatable to most people. You know, the unable to sleep, thinking through a situation that didn't go like you would have wanted it to. So, excellent, right, Junior. Fascinating piece. I enjoyed very much. What are we up to now?
Now we have one by Daniel Deschino, and it's called Descend into Madness. I've heard stories of angels floating in starlight to reach down and save the righteous, on wings like a dove to bring us to heaven and shower light on the earth. And I've heard of devils, the tricking of fools, ripping apart one's flesh, laughing at the pain, to just be put back together and ripped again, manipulating the wicked of the world to do their bidding and casting them into the hellfire eternal. Then I read the Bible. Angels are terrifying, and devils are kind of stupid. If you just use common sense, I guess that's why so many people are tricked by them. I don't really believe in such things anyway, but it doesn't really matter what I believe in, because what I am is what rips me apart every waking moment. And what I am is an animal in a world of contemplation. I am a jungle within a single cage on display in a zoo where spectators and animals stare into mirrors. But I can't help but feel superiority, the king of the animals, king of all animals, the ultimate species, the combination of all. It's all mine. And I channel the best and the worst of all of them. And as the raccoon, I consume and take whatever I see. With a disguise so clever, I take it all amidst the bright daylight. It is easy when everyone's a thief. But I can't take everything. I must save, as does the squirrel. But little things I can take. I always have room for that. Besides, I saw it. It's mine. Like the crow, I will keep it. Help protect those like me and attack those who try to steal. But I steal. But it's mine. But I steal. But I attack those who steal. But there's more. So much more. So much emotion. So much pain and love. So many animals to rule over. So much of everything. I'm very trapped. But I can't stop. Like the goblins of lore, I fill my cave with trash. But I can't throw it away. It's precious to me. It is trash, but it is precious. And deeper into the cave, and lore and fantasy I go. It's too late for me now. I can't take it. I can't take them. It's their fault. It's not me, but it is me. But it's them. All these animal instincts, emotionless carnivores, meek and subservient herbivores, crawling insects, swimming murderers. I try to hide as a Sasquatch, the Yeti. But someone's always looking for me. They won't stop. I explode like dragon fire to burn it all. Why did that happen? I pause. And when the flames die, one spark remains, and I'm quiet, hypnotized. It sits on my left shoulder, then on my right, and it whispers in a gentle, alluring fairy voice, "Kill them all. It's the only way." With a fluttering breath and a single tear, my spirit leaves my body, and I float up. And as I float up, I look down to see my hand holding a knife thrust deep in my heart. It is all silence, and I find peace. End poem.
Great read, Fiziana. This is a really interesting piece from Daniel. I feel like this is a lot darker than he normally goes. But, I mean, it's adequately titled. You know, the part, I'm interested in the way that it starts in the Bible, with the biblical, you know, devil and angel concept, like the classic. It starts with the classic. You know, and then kind of rips that apart, and it's like, angels are terrifying, and devils are kind of stupid. Which I always found fascinating, too, about the Bible. It's not so much that the devils are stupid, but, like, that Satan's sins are, like, wanting to know things. Oh, that evil guy. But I found that as an interesting way to start this off. And then I really like the phrase of, I am a jungle within a single cage on display in a zoo where spectators and animals stare into mirrors. I really like that, honestly, just as like a four-line poem on its own. There's a lot of thought just in those four lines, you know, the complexity of what it is to be a person, you know, in a single body. You know, nobody is one thing. People are very complex and have a lot of facets and, you know, a lot going on, or at least most people, but some people have talked about. But I kind of like the inner reflection of that, like the contemplation of that, of, you know, being like a zoo exhibit, and yet a world, or at least like a large climate within a body. And then followed by where spectators and animals stare into mirrors, makes me think of you know, people taking selfies or, like, literally staring into mirrors and, you know, the fascination with outward appearance, basically, and a lack of examination of that jungle. I found that just a really interesting four-line stanza by itself. Then within the larger context of this poem, I found it very fascinating, this very self-centered and grandiose, like, and kind of whack job rationale here that kind of happens. You know, the I'm the best of all the animals because I'm made of all the animals, and everything belongs to mine. It's very entitled, you know, very grandiose mindset. And then the channeling of the best and the worst of all of them, and then we get into, like, what that means, which is, you know, the tie-in to your contest, the raccoon that tells you to just take whatever you want, and the squirrel, which, you know, a little bit of a hoarder, you know, and all this flawed rationality about taking. It's all, like, taking, mine. You know, taking us a squirrel, taking us a raccoon, taking us the crow. You know, I steal. It is mine. I steal, but I attack those who steal. And yet, even that, but I attack those who steal, still doesn't feel like a self-reflection. It feels like if you try to take what's mine and it's all mine, you know, it feels more like the subtext. You know, and the circular trapping of that, you know, there's more, so much more, like all the things that are felt and also seems like hoarded, like a bottling up within this jungle of a person, and the trappedness and the still just taking, you know, I fill my cave with trash, like polluting your own personal environment. That was a really interesting take on this, you know, I can't throw it away. Like having a emotional hoarding problem. I found it a very fascinating concept, especially as someone who is a child of a hoarder, and how our house just was full of garbage, like actual garbage all the time. You know, and then there's some, like, some emotional intelligence in this, you know, like it's their fault, it's not me, turns into, but it is me, but it's not, you know, like these glimmers of a fight, and yet it still devolves basically into suicide, which is dark, you know, but kill them all is the only way. And when you've already defined yourself as all, receiving that, but I thought it was an interesting and dark piece, and it just gets more and more crazed as it goes in a really good way. And I think there's some really fascinating concepts in there about self-reflection and depth. So I enjoyed the piece very much. Your thoughts, Fabiana?
I enjoyed it too. He says in his AM that when he started, he had no idea where it was going, and it just kind of like went where it did, and he was like, as madness does. And I thought it was really good that he just, like, went with that kind of stream of consciousness kind of thing of, like, just take it where it naturally goes, just follow the poem's storytelling and see. It was really fun to read. Like, it had such a nice, I don't know, easy flow to it, and it felt like it had just the right amount of repetition, where it's like there's a lot of but I or but it, but the part that it's using after that is different, so it's not just repetition, it's like patterns. I really liked, because what I am is what rips me apart every waking moment. Like, that's a powerful statement. I loved the part that you talked about where they're on display in the zoo. And then I really liked when it's in the raccoon mindset and but I steal, but it's mine, but I steal, but attack those who steal. I think it's calling out humanity for our hypocrisy of what, you know, taking things and then being angry when other people do, but doing it ourselves. It kind of makes me think of, like, the death penalty, where you're like, killing is wrong, so we're going to kill you. And there's just, like, this cycle of, like, if I'm doing it, it's the right thing. But I don't know. It feels, like, really philosophical, even though it's written simply, like, you know, there's just, like, a raccoon and a squirrel, like, chattering. And yet, I think it has some really deep meanings. Where is it? And, the hoarding part I definitely found interesting. It's trash, but it's precious. I can't throw it away. It's precious to me, but it's trash. I definitely feel that way. I mean, I'm not a full-on hoarder, like, you know, where there's, like, the house full of stuff, but at the same time, I have a really hard time getting rid of anything. I do, because I'm always like, but I'm gonna need it, or it has meaning, or something. I can see how it happens, and yet some of the things, like, you know, like, it's not valuable, but it's precious, but it is trash. So one man's treasure is another one's trash, or one man's trash is another one's. I'm saying it totally wrong, but, like, you know, people have different values of different ideas of what something is worth. So I found that interesting in that section. And he pulls in so many of the different creatures, the Sasquatch, the, various of the options. And he had asked me at the time, he said, I can't choose. Can I use more than two? And I said, yes, that's fine. And having the fairy there kill them all, and then to realize that, like, the only way to truly do that is to kill yourself. And that out-of-body experience, I float up and I look down and see my own hand holding a knife. Like, that's a very eerie, dark ending. But this whole thing is just, like, almost dreamlike in the way that it plays out. But it has real-life kind of thoughts. I don't know how to express it, but I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I agree. There were just so many different kind of philosophies. I think it pokes a lot, you know, frequently, but not deeply necessarily, at a lot of critiques on humanity in general. I don't know. It's very interesting. It's very clever. It feels very philosophical. I agree with that statement. Wonderful comment, Stasiana. Very thought-provoking.
So that was the end of that contest. Can you explain to us about your callus contest?
Yeah. So I did a contest. There weren't a whole lot of entries, but I was just exploring the idea of a callus. There being two different definitions of callus, you know, based on spelling, essentially. One being, like, a hard exterior, like a, my brain all of a sudden just froze. like a thickened piece of skin that's like a protective layer that keeps things from harming you, essentially. And then a second meaning of callus being like a hardened part of your personality. But the part that really fascinated me in particular was the idea of a callus. It's reversible. It's like a scar that can heal and a scar that can go away. So I just kind of wanted to explore those as a concept. So that was the contest.
So. Awesome. So we have three people who wrote to that who we have permission to read their poems. And it happens that at least two of them were in my contest too, so they get repeat readings tonight. And Peter Solway is the first one, if you will give his a read.
Absolutely. So this is Tough Pit by Peter Salve. A seasoned Claxton, still strumming, string picking, microphone approaching, whimpering, Layla pleading, kneeling, begging audience, please stop screaming, fucking Philistines, a callous star demands. Keith Richards, on the other hand, knuckles of arthritis, ancient calluses riff to beat the Mariner blues, pirate the seven seas, stub out cigarette on fingertips, walk the hound dog plank, still sticky with brown molasses, waking servants up in success estates, the blast like it should be expressed. How can you feel so good? Tough tips to lick at session's end. King Clapton off to the moon, famous fingers dipped in oxygen, supernova, boring dresser, smug god of lead guitar, to afford such excursions fast and far. Layla, one small step, no sweat. George left, a husband better, to leap beyond screaming fans and their fucking requests for Layla. Me, no Lord Byron on guitar, tap, tap, tapping on laptop, stanzas nonstop, one finger typing, no quill of Don Juan, print of fame, callous ink stained in candlelight, nor fingerprint anon upon a virginal atom, God touching about to happen, plumbing the Sistine ceiling, tough tips yet to learn, scratching an unshaved penis. Me on AP, tourism.com, getting a serious callus from all this scenic writing, inner recitations, alphabet citing, vineyard musing, A to Z, full stop in time. Satellite launched at sunset's end. Multiple meanings, crafted cubism, Clapton and Richard still strumming, Layla and brown sugar. Hips bleeding, museum's parchment to turn, oak callous arc of wisdom's testament, splinters of a weathered covenant, kings of clapping, all irrelevant like species extinct, rhino and elephant, once skin so tough. Rainbow religion bereft, dove defunct, abortions in Bethlehem, Nietzsche dead like Beethoven, Titanic long sunk on bottom. And nude Adam, another angel fallen, club foot of editing thumb, mouth to wander the see-through screen, alone and sadly modern. End poem. I really enjoyed this. The exploration, first starting off with, is known largely for his song Layla, despite how much he hates that himself and has expressed that to his fans who request it. I think embodies, you know, both having the callous hands of the guitar player, you know, the calloused fingertips that come from strumming a guitar, but also a really callous personality. You know, he's kind of known for being an asshole, which is exemplified here, you know, he refers to his own fans as fucking Philistines. You know, like, that's not very nice. And then to follow that up with Keith Richards, who also has calluses on his hands from playing songs, and how he also is singing Brown Sugar, you know, that song over and over again, similarly, but without nearly the bad attitude, you know. So just the differences that you can take from similar situations that almost feel more mindset, you know, related. So I thought that was an interesting take to start off. You know, and then it goes more towards an internal narrative. You know, me, no Lord Byron on guitar. Like, I can't play the guitar. Like, I'm not that kind of an artist. You know, but I'm tapping on a laptop, one finger typing, no quill of Don Juan. So, like, I'm not that articulate, and I'm typing one finger at a time, and it's not very skilled necessarily, but it is callous. and then it kind of double dips into meaning again, of being kind of rough as we jump into this depiction of Adam about to touch God, and yet refocusing on Adam's penis and the callousness of that and the roughness, like the coarseness of that, because it's kind of an uncouth place to go, you know, like it's not, you know, probably where most of the art of the Sistine Chapel were focused, you know, and to then also getting a serious callus from all the scenic writing and being kind of sick and set tired of myself, like, you know, of citing the alphabet and reading scenic poems or like, you know, all the different topics, it gets a bit tiring, and then like the typing at the same time building the calluses on the fingers. You know, it's just really interesting the layered definitions that he took of callus, which was great because that's really kind of what I was getting at. I love too that he then takes the idea that people die, you know, pop stars die, king of clapping, again, a point that Eric Clapton will be irrelevant, just like all of the animals who have had tough skin as well, like the rhino and elephant. Not extinct, hopefully never, but at least not yet. You know, and how none of that really matters in the long term, because all of this is just temporary. You know, callous or not. And then to end as, again, a refocusing, the mouse wandering through the see-through screen alone, and sadly modern. And I thought the use of the word modern with an E was particularly creative here, because he's talking about using a computer to write poems, which is modern, like, without the E. But with the E, it's talks about like an ultra modern style of something, but it has like a negative connotation with it. Like it's kind of a derogatory usage. Like it's not usually flattering, you know. It's kind of like in reference to Art Deco style art from like the 20s. Well, not the 20s, more like the 30s. Mostly the 30s, but in today's usage, it's more like mocking something for trying to be super modern and edgy. So I thought that was an interesting word usage, to take one word usage, callous, and take it and twist it to all of its interesting definitions, and then to end with a new word that is similarly multi-textured. So I really like this. I thought it was a great write and a good exploration of the theme.
Well, first of all, that was an amazing in-depth comment, so I have a hard time saying anything after that, because I feel like you've gone like above and beyond, which is awesome. I will say that I think that choosing guitarists was perfect for this, because they do have those finger calluses, but they're also likely to get callous because of their fame. So I thought that was a really clever choice on his part. And then using like their different styles and reactions to their fans. When it said Clapton off to the moon, I actually started to look it up, because I'm like, is he one of those celebrities who's like paying to go into space? But he's not. It was just because of he has some space albums and songs. So I was really curious. I'm like, is that an actual thing? But no. I thought that this worked really well. I liked when he included himself with the tap, tap, tapping, and me on aptourism.com. And it's true. I mean, through AP, we can experience poets from all over the world and hear about their lives and their perspectives. I like the way that he contemplates that full stop in time. It's sort of like, because they talked about being on a typewriter type thing before, and like full stop, you got to do like the go to the next line if you're going old school typing. And I think that works really well there. As much as that's more modern than, you know, the quill of Don Juan, it's, I don't know, I feel like he's going through different time periods of writing there. Where is it? All irrelevant, like species extinct rhino and elephant, once skin so tough. And while, thankfully, rhinos and elephants are not completely extinct, it is fair to say that having tough skin like they do is no longer enough. Like, in the past, in their natural environments, it was. It was protection from predators, from all different kinds of things, from any natural kind of threat. But then humans come along and, you know, guns and things that go beyond their ecosystem. And so it's no longer helpful to have those tough skins. And sometimes when, even if you're callous, you're taken out of context, you are no longer so tough. So this is very thought-provoking and interesting. Very well done, Peter.
Yeah, I like what you said about like it just not being enough, you know, just having exterior defenses doesn't cut it. You know, it's not the only thing it needs. No, I agree. It was great writing from Peter. So thank you. What is up next?
Now we have one by Ulo the Dawn, and I'm just trying to refresh so it will load. When I say refresh, it sounds like I'm like, oh, you know, I'm just freshening up. Not quite. My mom forgot that these shows were radio, and she kind of knows that I do it, but, like, doesn't actually listen, so she was just like, so where in your house do you do this? And I'm like, sometimes I'm in bed. And she was just like, like all scandalized, right? And she's like, well, what do people see? And I was just like, they don't see me at all. It was just so great. I was laughing
like
today.
The radio. Like the radio.
Yeah. The radio. They hear me. And she was just, it was just hilarious the way she gasped.
It's not
that scandalous. I was quite scandalous. It was like a fans-only kind of moment or something. I don't know. I do not have that, by the way. I don't think I'd have very many fans, even if I wanted to. It is finally loaded. So if you will give Vikings by Ulo the Dawn a read, that would be wonderful.
Absolutely. Oh, this is Vikings. It is by Brace of the Fiend that he or she has his or her being. They come in many forms because they once were already torn by the world and by the life in whichever they had their side. It dictates them to the scene because they had lost their light of being. I do not think they any worn bad or anything in the like of shown. Rather, someone who had to harden their heart because life did not give them the proper better start. Thus is it in the like of such, callous in the height of their budge. I'm sure they can be cruel as calm to them they like. So too is it in the sight of the light of sight. But if you turn unto them in the wronger side, then you will feel the light of their might, that which tells them to turn too hard, so that they too may not recall their improper life at start. In any deer, we may be braced to lift light unto the state of this space, so that they may come into the better form, to be soft in the heart, to be vulnerable to the dark storm through the heart, a word or feeling that could taint your bard, the one who sings the song of the scene, light in the hope of a life in their being. So we too are all in some way turned, because we can sense that broken of the heart if it is too firm. It can become of hurtsome to the torn. So I do not judge them who are of callous in the daunt. Let all do the things for the better. In some sense, they are them who stand of the feather to touch and call all to a normal norm so that they can become the better of the form without to dear themselves into heart, lest they break the things of the better bard. The one who sings into the torn form, a Viking, is also of some way the lifting born. So we are from different place, some in regions and some in the time at pace. So long we know where they, we, coming from, so too are we of the watchful intactness in the light of the horn. Vikings, book. End of poem. So this is interesting. The use of the word Viking, you know, makes me think of Valhalla. And this poem in general makes me think of battling. You know, and the way Vikings get into Valhalla is via battle. It's like the only way to get in is via fighting. This is interesting because it implies, at least to me, that fighting isn't just about, like, actual battle. It's not like picking up an axe or, you know, stabbing somebody, but even, like, internal battle, and not to judge the kind of battles that people have had because you don't know. So I thought that was really kind of interesting. I also enjoyed the theme of non-judgment throughout this, you know, that people have gone through some hard things, and you may or may not know what they've been. You may see someone who it seems like an a-hole, or seems like they don't care, or, you know, maybe isn't as attractive as they used to be, or, you know, anything, and that a lot of times it's because of the, like, twists and hurtfulness of things that they've gone through throughout their life. And then it talks about how that can be undone. You know, let all do the things for the better. You can still improve your station. You can become a better person. People's hearts can soften. But, you know, the biggest part of the soft heart being soft is to not judge people. And the battles that they're fighting, whether you can see them or not. As usual, I'm always fascinated by the formatting of this, you know, where the language is interesting because it's not proper. Like, the structures aren't like you would think they would be. They're not necessarily complete sentences. The grammar is twisted. And it's more about rhythm and emphasis than anything else. Or almost like backing up. You know, I find it interesting because it makes me back up, not to like overanalyze every word, but to pull the theme from it, the feeling from it, the gist from it. It's like, it's almost like practicing reading the waves and not looking to the bottom of the ocean. So I always find these really fascinating because I have to like retrain the way I analyze something. Anyway, just a note, I always find it interesting about these pieces from Lord of the Dawn. But that's what I get from this one, is life is hard, and people fight battles, both literally and figuratively, and it can cause them to become hard to protect themselves or twisted, and not to judge that, because you don't know where they've been, and you don't know where you're going. Very interesting piece. I enjoyed it very much. Your thoughts, Daisiana?
I found the formatting a little bit difficult because I'm so used to the poems being like having more line breaks that reading on my screen, as much as I like reading paragraphs in novels, I find it like, oh, that's a lot of text. So it just takes me a little bit longer to process. But I it is very poetic within the paragraph form. I really liked they once were already torn by the world and by the life. And it's like it hints all throughout that you can recognize that people have been torn. And like you said, it's kind of anti-judgment because it shows that you don't know what people have been through. I really liked, so we too all are in some way torn because we can sense that broken is the heart if it is too firm. When people have firm hearts, it's probably because they were broken and got healed that way. I thought that it has a good, sentiment to it all, very good message. And I too think that the idea why it's connected to Vikings is because it's that having to fight your way into Valhalla. 'Cause like some people think of Vikings as like the people, but actually it's not like a society exactly. Viking was a job. To be a Viking was to be a raider, a sailor and raider. The farmers of their time were not called Vikings except for the ones who went a Viking. But the idea of being a Viking tends to be one of battle. And I like that you pointed out that it can be an internal battle. It doesn't have to be violence. It can be that mental battle. I really like that twist on it.
That you added that, a Viking is a job description. Because I do think there is, less understanding of what that. I think people have a large, like, almost like Viking is a stand-in for just, like, any Nordic people or Scandinavian people. Not really a particular job or class of people, but I can imagine trying to read this on my phone would be really difficult because it'd probably be way longer and more smushed than it looks on my computer screen. So that's a good point, a valid point. But wonderful, right? And again, really do appreciate the concept of battles looking differently. So, thank you for the write.
So the third what entry in your contest. Sorry.
Sorry.
The next one is by Daniel DeShino, and it's for that same contest, the Callus one. It's called Immunization. I am buried under everything that was. Somewhere under it all is me. I don't think I've really learned to accept or take anything. I've just deadened my nerves. Every distraction, every fantasy, escapism of daily denial, a shot of Novocaine, and I feel nothing. Every humiliating kick in the crotch, every face slap and sucker punch, my nerves dissolve further and further and slither into my bones, and the skeletal hope of death becomes my only future expectations for unhindered touch. But for now, my callous feet still need to walk. The ground just means nothing. Unlike the preschool feet of remember days, with sand, grass, and carpet, I felt everything. And a connection lost in my hands that once touched, only now grab and push. So sad that now I touch another, and I am still so far away. And bandage to tourniquet to cast. What I need is time to heal. I just can't afford it. Buying time is not a commoner genetic trait. So beneath this callous mind, for now, stays buried the one who cares. End poem.
Read Ecclesiana. I was fascinated by the fact that it's called immunization. Because you think of like a shot that prevents you from an illness,
which I think is an interesting twist on the topic because, you know, like discussing the callus is it's there to protect you. It's like a layer of protection, but then also immune, you know, and in this case, it's like almost immune to feeling, immune to connection, like in that slowly becoming immune to the world around you. I thought it was a really interesting twist. I'm enjoying the titles this evening, I think in particular. But then looking at the piece, you know, and this becoming numb, you know, every little thing that goes wrong, every drop of humiliation, everything that doesn't feel right, just kind of built up and turns into this emotional numbness, which again is akin to that callus because it's an exterior layer. Like, it's not that they don't feel. It's not that there aren't emotions. It's not that these things aren't registering. They're just not manifest. So I found that fascinating, you know. But again, it gets at, like, that kind of impermanence of it. It says, but for now. You know, but for now, my callous feet still need to walk. You know, I don't have the time. I don't have the effort to take to basically fluff it off, you know, to re-feel, to become unknown. I really like, too, the progression from a bandaged tourniquet to cast. You know, these being, like, more severe or stronger coverings for wounds. You know, a bandage, well, that's easy enough to just take on or off. You know, it's, you know, it can even just be like a band-aid, you know, to a tourniquet. You know, now we've got something a little more difficult to remove and more of an emergency placement. You take a tourniquet off, there's like a gush of blood. You can't just remove that so easily without, you know, bad results. To cast, you know, and now we've got, like, that hardened exterior layer that actually has to be, like, sawed off. So I enjoyed that. I thought that was a good progression that kind of mirrors the theme for the poem. I was disheartened by the idea of what I need is time to heal, and I just can't afford it. Almost like just taking time off work or, you know, having money is the reason that they can't step back. And it's interesting because I don't feel like it has a lot to do with money in actuality. Money doesn't help with that kind of numbness and that kind of pain. If anything, it makes you feel worse sometimes because it's like, well, I have money now, so I shouldn't be feeling this way. You know, like it almost feels invalidating. You know, it's just interesting, like, the emotional investment is not available, which is almost its own hardened way to think. So I thought this was interesting. I also love the end, you know, it's like, for now, stays buried, the one who cares. And, you know, it's still there. It's just buried for now. It's just tucked away. But eventually, you know, mainly the return. So I enjoyed the night. I thought it was well done. I thought they explored the concept well. I liked the title quite a bit as well. So, thank you, Daniel. Stacey, on your thoughts.
I really enjoyed it. I liked when it was talking about the way that walking becomes just walking when, you know, when preschool feet, so, like, when you're really young, you feel the sand, like, every little grain of it, the grass, you notice all the blades, the carpet, you absorb those textures, you make note of them, you're, you know, and I think that I felt everything part is a really good metaphor because, yes, when you're young, you actually do pay attention to all those little details because you're learning about them. But also, you find wonder in everything. You notice everything. You feel your emotions really big. You know, we get mad at kids for throwing tantrums or, you know, having the big feels. but they're still learning to process things, and they haven't become numb where they can push things to the back of their mind because, like, whatever, everything hurts. They feel everything, and good and bad, and there's this idea of, like, when you get older, you get more callous, and you don't notice those things, you know? Your feet walk, but they don't notice the way things feel. Your emotions happen, but you don't really take note of them in the same way. So I found that section really interesting. You know, it's such a casual thing to mention, you know, that when you're younger, you notice things like grass, but I think it's a really, really great metaphor. And the hand part really caught me, like, that once touched, now only grab and push. I touch another and I'm still so far away. You know, you think about, like, your first kind of crush, or, like, you know, that when the tiniest little, like, oh, I brushed against his hand is, like, so exciting, and you're very aware of, like, all those tiny little, what would seem now insignificant touches being such a big deal, and to feel that connection. And even how, like, when a relationship is new, you know, there's a different kind of fire in the touch than later on. Not to say that you don't enjoy it later and have that connection, but it's just, there's not the same, I don't know, spark necessarily as in the beginning. So it's that idea that he's become, or his character has become, numb to this, and still so far away. So it's like he's not in the moment. He's not grounded and totally, like, experiencing it. His mind is elsewhere. He's not paying attention to what he's doing. He, you know, it's, you may hold someone's hand and not be, like, thrilled of, like, I'm holding their hand, as you, you know, grow old and more callous, I guess. So it's just, it's an interesting way of looking at it, with those tiny little details of appreciating your feet and your hands, and the way that they feel less, both physically and their emotional impact.
Yeah, I also like the lines that describe, like, the feet in the grass and things like that, because I still do that as an adult, and I remember doing it as a kid, and I do think, like, how many adults still go outside, like, without shoes on, and wiggle their feet into the grass or in shaggy carpet, or, you know, like that new experience of touch, that just allowing yourself to be absorbed in the sensation. I always found it really fascinating. So this is something I still, like, rather intentionally do. I'm very kind of a tactile person, I guess. I like to feel things, or I hate to feel things. That's the opposite. Like, I cannot hands the feeling of chalk on my hands, and I never had, like, since I cannot remember how old. I've always hated chalk. I can't stand that feeling. Like, I can't. It makes my skin crawl. I hate it. Or, like, the inside feeling of, like, cheap synthetic sleeping bags, like, on my feet. They kind of get stuck, like, in the ridges of my feet, and I can't tolerate that either. I guess that's just a very kind of tactile person. So it kind of made me think of that. But just that loss of appreciation for simple new sensations. So I thought that was a really great comment.
I love that you still feel those things so strongly. I noticed that, like, after my brain surgery stuff, for a while I had trouble feeling. Everything was numb. But then when feeling came back, it was like feeling things for the first time. It was super overwhelming. I was at the occupational therapist, and she was like, "Do you feel your feet?" And I'm like, "I feel every piece of fiber in the sock, and it's totally overwhelming, and you're talking, and I can't focus because I feel my socks." And she was just like, "Okay." So we're going to work on
it. Check the yes box.
Yes. Can feel. But it's like, I know, I feel like I do appreciate some textures. I find it very grounding. Sometimes if I'm having a panic attack, I will try to feel something that has, like, a distinctive texture to, like, bring me into the world. But also, I'm very sensitive to certain things, too. Like, it's just some days I want to be, like, covered in blankets, and some days I, like, can't stand the idea of wearing clothes. I'm like, nothing's touching my skin today. So it's, like, it's very odd how it goes both extremes. But I don't think many people think about these things. Yeah. Anyway, I digress. That was the last one from your contest. But I also made a contest about The Sandman. So I've been watching that show, and I read the comics a long time ago. And I'm in love with this TV show, The Sandman. And I generally love Neil Gaiman, who is the author of the comics and is also involved in the creation of the show. So I picked quotes from the show. So you don't have to know the show or the comics to be able to write to it. It was just, you know, write to what the quote makes you feel. And the first entry is by Gerald E. Green. Normally he does audios. I did not get an audio from him, which is really sad because he has such an amazing voice. But so do you, Babbler. So can you please read that poem by Gerald?
Absolutely. This is choice and consequence. The smallest choice can be profound, a tiny difference made that steers direction. Bit or tad, then later ones are swayed. Think carefully before you act. Consider consequence, because it matters with the child becoming recompense. Some choices loom with darkest heel. All options poor or worse, or time itself will choose for you, as if a fate and curse. Then there are those that matter not, such simple little things, envelop mighty men that must be overcome, involving great complexity to circumvent their scrum. You will look back, you will agree that choices formed your course, and you might cheer about success, or maybe feel remorse. End poem. I like this, you know, just starting off with the smallest choice can be profound. It really can. You know, the choices that you make obviously impact your life, but sometimes it's really in unforeseen ways, and you don't really know what those ways are. You may never know. Like, some of them you know for sure, but sometimes you just don't. I forgot what it was I was doing the other day. Sometimes I just have these random thoughts that occur to me. I'm sure everybody does. I was driving down the road, and there was a kid who darted out almost in front of my car. Kid never actually made it all the way to the road, but it delayed me, and I was a bit frazzled. And then I kept driving, and then because I stopped for that kid, I got stuck behind a train, and the train took me a really long time. It was a train full of logs. I've never seen a train with logs on it before, like a log train. But in this case I did, and it was going remarkably slow. There were people in the park next to the train tracks that were walking their dogs faster than the train was moving. So that was kind of frustrating because I was on my way to work. So I got to work and I was a few minutes late, and I'm like, well, that really sucks that I was a few minutes late. I finally get to work, and I sit down at my desk, and people came out and were like, did you hear, like, that giant boom? And I was like, no, I just got here. I was a few minutes late this morning, and apparently we had, like, blown an electrical panel in my office, and people were looking for me. And I thought, you know, if that little kid hadn't run out, like, in front of my car, and I hadn't got stuck by the train, and I'd gotten to work on time, like, what would I have been doing in here when that electrical panel, like, burst? But I think about that, and, like, how the smallest things can have much larger consequences, like, even if you don't know what they are. And I think I spoke at that a little bit. That tangent went a little longer than I meant for it to me to explain. But, you know, and then there's different kinds of choices. you know, there's choices that weigh on you heavily, choices that don't even feel like choices, like what do I get for lunch, you know, and then there's other choices like they're bigger, they're weightier, you know, like do I put my parents in a nursing home, do I sell everything I own and go on vacation for 2 years and live my life and then just know I'll never retire, you know, like all these different things, and they really do become, you know, life story. You know, and then to tie it up, if you will look back, you'll agree that the choices formed your course and you might cheer about success or maybe feel remorse at having made the wrong choice. I will say don't spend your time too much thinking about remorse, you know. The coulda, woulda, shouldas will kill you, you know. Can I do, how I do it better? You know, reframe that. You know, you can't change the past, but you can make changes going forward. So, anyway, I really enjoyed the piece, and obviously I got a little tangential in my thoughts. I just kept as reading all the different kinds of choices you can make, thinking of examples, all the different things that I would put into that category of choice. So I really enjoyed it. So great, right? Andrea was great.
I enjoyed your tangent. I thought that was really good. And, you know, it's true. I mean, like, you could have been there when bad things happened. So it's those little things can make a difference. And, you know, choosing to take a bus at a certain time or whatever, like, you know, think you might meet someone different. It's just, it's amazing how a small thing could change so much. I really liked the lines, enveloped into small routines, attached with fragile strings. The idea that, like, those little routines are just held together barely by small decisions of, like, this is, like, the way that you're choosing to spend your day, and then you kind of, because that's just what you do, then you make, you know, smaller and smaller choices where it's like you have to choose not to do it because it just seems like an automatic choice, but it's attached by fragile strings. Things can change. If you change that routine, it could cause an issue. Like the last couple of weeks I've been having seizures again. I hadn't for a long time, and you know, the doctor's asking me, like, well, what do you do differently that may have done this? And I'm like racking my brain, like, I don't know, maybe there is some small thing that I've changed that I don't even realize that I've changed that's setting things off. And it could be some, like, small choice of, like, I don't know, I can't even think, but, like, you know, what you eat.
A new dryer seat.
Yeah, like something like that, like new shampoo. You take a different route to work, and there's, like, I don't know, more flashing lights there. I don't know, something that may set you off, a small thing. So, you know, you have to think about, like, what is different. And sometimes there's not really anything, but, like, you know, some small choices could make the difference. So anyway, thank you, Gerald. It was nice to think about how small choices can have such a big impact. Our next prompt is, everybody has a secret world inside of them. I mean everybody, all the people in the whole world. I mean everybody, no matter how dull and boring they are on the outside, inside them they've all unimaginable, magnificent, wonderful, stupid, amazing worlds. Not just one world, hundreds of them, thousands maybe. So that's part of the Neil Gaiman section that I'm doing, and I'm going to start with one by G.A. Grimm. We have an audio for that one. I want to make sure we get that one in. G.A. Grimm, here we go.
Upon Leaving the Waking World by G.A. Grimm. Within me is a beacon, a lodestone, home to all things born in this world of slumber, a place, as of yet, too fragile for reality, in which all may take whatever shape they wish, paint themselves in any color, love who they want, and dare to be their true selves. For there is no fear here. None will be judged or oppressed. Those nightmares only reside upon the opposite side of the veil. So come, dream with me.
Well, wonderful, SoundCloud. And I say it every time, but I mean it every time, too. I love to hear poetry in the author's voice. To know that it was read and expressed in the way intended, I think it makes a big difference when hearing a poem. So much appreciated for the SoundCloud. Thank you, T.A. Grimm. I really enjoyed the piece, too. Especially with his voice, I feel like he has a really great voice for narrative. It almost sounds like the narration, like, in a movie, just the way that he enunciates and speaks and the pattern of his voice. But just the idea of within me is a beacon, a lodestone, it instantly feels very magical. Like very temporal, like a concentration, that you find in a loop. Home to all things born of this world of slumber. It's like this place inside of a person that is like the collection of their dreams, where all the places and things they go and explore in their subconscious and in their sleep, like collect. And the magic of that, it feels very magical, in which all may take whatever shape they wish, paint themselves in any color, love who they want, dare to be their true selves. There's no fear here. There's no judgment here. It's just a place of, like, absolute freedom and expression. And the world isn't ready for that. The world isn't ready for the magic of just complete freedom, essentially. Get to know it's still living and it's still concentrating and in the dreams those places still exist. And then the open invitation to come and join them. Come dream with me, like experience this place without fear with me. So I really liked it. It felt very magical. I felt like I was about to be taken on into a 2-hour movie about exploring this place, which I look forward to. So I really start the write. Thank you. Fiziana, your thoughts?
Yeah, it definitely does feel like it could be like the beginning of something very grand. It's short, but it creates like an excitement and an imagination of like what is within this world. I liked the lines, a place as of yet too fragile for reality. Recognizing that the dream isn't solid yet, but that it's there. It's a place where they can be. It's a safe haven to have these dreams. And that whole section after that, may take whatever shape they wish, paint themselves in any color, love who they want, and dare to be their true selves. I mean, this is a gorgeous poem. It has such great feeling in it, and there's that wonderful message of like inclusiveness, where he's welcoming everyone into the dream, and the idea of in the dream being able to be who you want. This feels like it would be something that would be really great for like Pride Month, or I mean, not that it has to be for a specific month, but like that idea of like you becoming your true self, and being able to dream yourself into that in a way that there is no judgment, that you're just there. It's a very kind of empowering write, I find. And he does have a wonderful, wonderful reading voice. You're right. He's a great narrator. So I really appreciate having that audio. I think this is beautiful. And as much as Sandman is dark and kind of scary, it does have like this kind of like lightness where he wants people to be able to have positive things in their dreams. And even the character of Death in the show is quite loving and gentle. And it's just like totally changes the idea of the Grim Reaper. So that being able to turn this into like a positive twist on those dreamings, it's beautiful.
You know, I haven't seen the show at all, but I read somewhere once, and it might even be Neil Gaiman, because I read quite a bit of this stuff. But I remember reading years ago the idea that, like, how nice of an idea the Grim Reaper is. You know, that there's this being that comes to you when it's your turn to die and, like, guides you into the afterlife. You know, that kind of looks out for you and helps you make it from the life of the living to the place of the dead, you know. And how that shouldn't be frightening. Like, that it's really nice that there's someone there to do that, you know, to guide you in that way, whereas the alternative is you die and who knows, and you're just kind of left to your own devices. Which, honestly, I agree, that seems way more frightening to me than the idea of having a mythical being there or some kind of somebody to be like, and you've died, and this is, you know, these are your options, kind of a thing. So, anyway, just a thought, if you mentioned that.
I think you would like episode 5 of Sandman. I actually find it very comforting. I mean, not that I believe that you know, what Neil Gaiman wrote is reality, but I feel like if I could choose, that would be a good thing.
Not a bad
I like
thing.
The way it's answered. Yeah.
All right.
So we have 10 minutes. I think that will let us do one more to the same prompt. So I will do this one because we haven't read any by him. And a few other people who wrote to the prompt, we've had multiple. Peter Solway, Daniel Deschino, that our regulars, wrote to all the things, which is amazing. I love having them in every contest. But I will save them for next week from this contest so we can give someone else a voice. This is Body of Every Body, Very Big Universe, by Brenda Ban Panda. Body of everybody, very big universe, beautiful worlds within soul discovers, because life soul, atomic part of Lord, blessings God from heart like world, base of Lord at heart to guide mind, beautiful world with oceans we find, blue colored love ocean, ocean of law, big ocean of words, at heart world so, best oceans of kindness and wisdom, base of life, soul is mind, I confirm. Bodies, another world, positively mind. Basic natures here as sound, fire, wind. Big fighting between opposite natures. Bad, good, hate, love, pains, pleasures. Brain is main name of mind under skull. Being neutral, brain feels past, fail, equal. Big universe of Lord, as with many worlds, body universe also occupies many worlds. Belief and faith of myself on prompt 3. Branches too important within the body tree. Branch of mind is meant for the nest life bird. Branch of heart, one secret world for the Lord. Both soul and supreme soul when leave body, body dies, so be burnt in fire as it has no need. End poem.
Excellent read, Feziana. This was an interesting piece. I feel like there's this interesting divide in this between the body and the mind. And they're treated very differently. Soul is kind of being held on the same plane here as body. You know, and there's definitely a religious subtext to this, you know, with the mentions of Lord and God and what happens when you die. But I'm more fascinated, honestly, on the playing of feelings and the way the different things that make up a person as like a landscape, you know, like especially like oceans. So many oceans in this world. You know, the universe is just full of these oceans, you know, blue-colored love ocean, ocean of law, ocean for words and heart, oceans of kindness and wisdom, you know, so many oceans. It's very water-centric, which I found fascinating. And then it gets back into that dichotomy, you know, fire, wind, bad, good, hate, love, pains, pleasures, and then you've got, you know, mind, body, and the splits that are in there. You know, the branches too, too important within body tree, branch of mind and branch of heart. And that when the mind or soul leaves the body is no longer needed. So like it's a two-part system. I found it very fascinating. The structure was interesting. The sentence structure, was different. You know, definitely the impression of someone who maybe first language is structured differently. So, well done. I enjoyed it. Your thoughts, Viviana?
I found it interesting that when he was talking about the elements, fire, wind, he did not talk about earth. Like you said, water was talked about a lot, but in the list of elements, he has sound. And I've never seen sound work. Well, seen sound. I've never noticed sound in a grouping of elements before. It's one of the senses, but to have it as one of the elements is really interesting. It kind of makes sense, like sound waves. It's its own, I can't even think of, like, I was going to say dimension, that's not quite right, but I'm just fascinated that he included sound with the fire and wind. And I'm trying to wrap my mind about how that is one of the basic things of nature. And, you know, maybe it is, and I've just never considered it. So I find that really, really fascinating. And an interesting take on the prompt when it talks about everyone having multiple worlds within them. He's not so much thinking about the different kinds of, like, worlds that they've imagined or their memories or their hopes, but he's looking at the idea of, like, the different parts of yourself. So there's a world within your mind, the things you think, and there's a world within your heart, the things you feel, and then there's the world that your body experiences. So it's a really interesting way to break it down. It's not how I would have taken the prompt, but I like that, you know, we get a different perspective.
Yeah, I agree. It does feel like the different worlds are just different. It's like looking at what makes up a person under like a microscope or a spyglass or something, like to really focus each little bit and making it into its own world instead of its own part. I am still very fascinated by the absolute lack of land. I find that fascinating. Like, why are there no mountains or hills and not even a mention of earth? I'm very intrigued by that it is landless. It is a very water-centric universe. Fascinating. I enjoyed it. Well,
I agree, because usually there's earth with the fire and air and water, but no earth. And I wonder if that was, you know, if there was great meaning in that and in intention. That's true. I've never seen earth be excluded in that way. So it's a water world. Very, very interesting.
I mean, thinking about it, even in terms of like Captain Planet, like you've got spirit and no earth.
Yeah. Oh, Captain
Not
Planet! It's been so long since I've seen Captain Planet. That's awesome. do you have a contest yet for next time?
Not yet, but I do know what I am doing it on because I've started writing it, but it is not finished yet. It will be based on Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse 5. I'm currently pulling quotes. It's a book that I've meant to read for years and years and years and never gotten around to reading. And I finally decided, you know, I need to read this one. It's been recommended to me I don't know how many times. Every time I look at my husband's forearm, I have guilt because he literally has the word "so it goes" tattooed on his arm. Never read the book. Like, I know what it is. I know what it's a reference to. I even know what it means, but I haven't ever read the book. So I finally decided I'm going to read this book, and I did. And so now I'm putting together quotes about it because there's some really fascinating lines in there that I think are pretty interesting and interesting. And we're discussing. So my next contest will be based on quotes from Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse 5.
Excellent. I have not read it either, I confess, so maybe these quotes will kick my butt into doing it finally, because it is one of those ones that's like on all of those lists and everyone says you should read it, and I haven't. So. yeah, I really should. Yes, I look forward to reading those quotes. And everyone should check out Babbler's Contest. The Sandman Contest is still open, and we will have some carryovers from that next week as well. Thank you very much, Babbler, for everything. And thank you to everyone who submitted writing to us. Thank you to G.A. Grimm for your audio. And I hope that I see you all in our contest very soon. Good night.
Good night, everyone.